From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking in the first half of our show today about veteran services, the needs that veterans face after they've finished their service in our armed forces, and how different aspects of our community sort of rise to that challenge and provide those for them. In particular, we're going to be talking about an upcoming event called the 2021 Veterans Bonanza, and we'll have dates and times and everything going on there. We're speaking with a couple of folks who are involved in the Bonanza and also with different veteran services organizations in our listening area. First of all, Scott Gomer is with the Tomah VA. He's a public affairs officer at Tomah VA. Scott, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me.
Adam Flood is also with us. He's a veteran services officer for the County of La Crosse. Adam, thank you very much for being here.
Appreciate your time.
Joining us today was a gentleman from the La Crosse Area Veterans Mentor Program, and he's not able to be with us, but I really like what that organization is doing. Adam is a former board member of that organization, so we'll bring that up as part of today's conversation as well. But first of all, let's just start with the 2021 Veterans Bonanza. Adam, what is the Bonanza for people who might not be familiar with it?
The Veterans Bonanza is an opportunity for veterans, spouses, dependents, caregivers, or anybody who interacts with a veteran to better understand benefits that may be out there. We found over the years that some veterans have utilized some of their benefits, thinking that they have also maximized them, when in real honesty, it's just a portion of what could be out there. Some veterans apply for state benefits or federal benefits, and some of them never know that they even exist. But really, some of that is bringing together those state and federal, and then bringing in for-profit, nonprofit, or other organizations to speak more about maybe gap areas that veterans may not qualify for federal, but maybe there's a for-profit, nonprofit organization that might be able to do it. Otherwise, these organizations just provide different opportunities. Some of them are hunting organizations in that they provide veterans the opportunity to get back engaged in activities they once were able to do, but have found barriers to continuing to do. And so it's really an opportunity for the vendors to get in front of the veterans to get in front of vendors that they never may have otherwise considered. Over the years, we've really focused from a local level, more of La Crosse County, but as we started drawing in more veterans from surrounding counties, we've grown to more state organizations and in some cases, some national organizations to really just begin educating veterans or the dependents beyond what they may know and really bringing together a community to show veterans what could be out there based on the need of the individual.
And we'll talk about this in much greater detail as the show goes on, but in terms of the Bonanza itself, let's just get it right out there to start with. It's at the La Crosse Center. And when is it taking place and how can people participate?
Veterans Bonanza will be taking place on Saturday, October 16th. So this upcoming Saturday here from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. And as you mentioned, it's down at the La Crosse Center here in La Crosse, Wisconsin. It is open to the public. There is no fee for admission. There is no pre-registration. It is simply show up and we'll get your name just so that we can have numbers and identify different other aspects. But really, you can stop down anytime, say as long as you would like to gather as much information as you'd like.
That's Adam Flood from La Crosse County. Turning now to Scott Gomer with the Tomah VA. Scott, how important are events like this that are conspicuous and happening out in public? How important are those in terms of the VA's mission to support our veterans?
I think they're critical to what we do. There are so many veterans that may or may not know about their veterans' benefits. And, one of the primary ones, the one that we are involved with, is veterans healthcare. So veterans will go to their county veteran service officer, folks like Adam, and get information. But they'll also sometimes come to us. And many times they're somewhat confused about the process. You know, there are a lot of moving pieces and with the things that we do. But, this opportunity to go out and meet with people, it's been difficult during COVID. It's still difficult. for example, we'll actually be outside the south entrance of the La Crosse Center, but we will be there to meet with veterans as they're coming and going, and we'll have a lot of great information to share. So it's something that really helps out to see veterans face-to-face and talk with them, listen to what they really need, and then point them toward the right direction to get some resources that we have or their supports.
Scott, talk about that initial getting in touch with the VA for somebody who's, my understanding is for somebody who is concluding their military service, it's pretty common for them to immediately be associated with the VA, and yet we hear of some people who have just opted either not to participate or have lost touch over the years. What is that process like of connecting with the VA?
Well, I'm a veteran, and I've gone through the experience. I'm actually a retired Air Force member. But, you know, when you're in the military, so much of what you do day in and day out is kind of, managed by your unit that you belong to. There are, you know, reminders about all the different types of things that you need to do. And a lot of the things are right there, you know, on post, on base, wherever you happen to be stationed. Once you depart from the military, whether that's after, you know, a couple of years or 20 plus years, you're kind of on your own. You're, you know, in many cases, you're moving back home or to some other part of the country that may not be near any military facilities whatsoever. And you're kind of left to fend for yourself. I mean, there is information that's provided. But again, as you go through that out processing from the military, there are so many things that, you know, it's almost information overload. And people don't always get the information that they need or don't remember or recall what they need. So the VA is here. We can help people out. You know, we get folks that have questions about whether they're eligible for health care, how they get connected with, different services. There are three parts of the VA that, you know, again, that can be a little bit confusing, but there's the Veterans Benefits Administration. They handle things like home loans or GI Bill for education. Veterans Health Administration, that's our part of it, which is the largest healthcare system in the country. And then the National Cemeteries part of the VA, which helps honor and remember those who have served the country. So again, here locally, events like this are great ways to get together with veterans. We also are always available through our website. And the va.gov website has just undergone some renovations, and they've really placed essentially every service or resource that we have through that va.gov portal. So I would encourage all veterans to go there as a great starting spot, and also connecting with their county veteran service officer, folks like Adam.
Scott, how you talked about qualifying. What makes a veteran qualified to receive health benefits from the VA?
There is a process. There's a form that's completed. They go through, and, you know, there's something called service-connected illness or injuries or things like that. Some are fairly obvious, you know, wartime combat injuries, things like that are service-connected. Other things can be, just be, you know, other types of ailments that people have that either were started or exacerbated while they were in the military. So, again, there's a process. There's a kind of a classification or a stratification of different categories of veterans who get healthcare services. So it is a process that people go through, and it can change over time. You know, some of it is based on changing health conditions. Some of it's changed or based on changed finances. You know, COVID has done that to a lot of people. So again, folks like Adam can definitely help with that. We have eligibility folks that work with that for new veterans that come to ask us or seek out health care. In fact, we will have our eligibility team there at the La Crosse Center for the Bonanza tomorrow.
So, Adam, in terms of the county-level services, you are with La Crosse County, your Veteran Services Officer with La Crosse County. What kind of needs do you see, you know, walking through your door, or at least walking through your virtual door, as in terms of veterans in La Crosse County?
We see them all. Really, what our office and offices across the state like ours, we are put in place to really just assist veterans in navigating some of their benefits, whether that be at the state or the federal level, and just try and ease the veteran into some of what it can be. As Scott mentioned, different branches of the VA have different requirements. And for an individual to know that, especially when maybe they're transitioning or they have medical needs that need to be met, can just be a little bit overwhelming. So where our office kind of steps in and plays a role is we just assist veterans in applying for that those benefits, making it a little bit easier for them to begin receiving some of the benefits or the meeting the needs that they have. So, you know, when we look at it, we do assist with the health care, the service-connected disabilities, education, burial benefits. We do see all walks of life and every level of need come through our office. And our objective really is just to identify what it is, assist the veteran in doing it, and then also look beyond their current need to try and identify the things they may not be aware of, just so that we can impart some information so that when they need to engage with us again, it's not so much at a crisis mode, but as an information gathering as they prepare to move into whatever that next stage would be. Reacting to the crisis is a little bit more difficult. And so we do want to try and ease veterans into understanding those benefits.
In terms of the things that they may be eligible for or that you may be able to help them with, is there something that that catches them off guard? Is there something that a large number of veterans might assume they don't qualify for and yet they do? Or how is it? Is there something that you think more people should bear in mind when they consider what veterans benefits they should be exploring?
Really, to the answer to that question, I just challenge veterans to really know all of their benefits. You know, when you start looking at a veteran who's recently discharging, their needs are different. They're getting out of the service. They may be looking for a job or looking to go into education. And so they're a little bit more hyper focused on trying to align those benefits to the next stage of their life, really potentially forgoing VA healthcare or VA benefits of other sorts. And then later on in their life, they don't even know that VA nursing homes or otherwise or burial benefits can really be there. And so it's really trying to take the challenge of having veterans not really look at the moment, but look at how their time in service may be impacting their life and how benefits may be available throughout their life at different stages and just expanding that. So we do see a lot of veterans, not that they don't know everything or that they don't know what to really look for, but they seem to come in with a singular mind of, I just need to get this one thing. And then later on, when the rest of it becomes relevant, I'll struggle to maybe look to find the other. And I just try and challenge veterans, understand everything now. It may be very overwhelming, but if they at least have an understanding some of these things can be there, it's just a little less overwhelming at that time.
And from your perspective in the county, Scott talked a little bit about who might qualify for health services. From your perspective with the county, what constitutes a veteran? How do you define that?
Now, we as a county don't really define a veteran. It is by either the state statute or the federal law that they have defined on what a veteran is. And what we do then is, depending on what the veteran's applying for, is we will navigate those definitions to identify then what the individual coming into our office is looking for. So we are just more of that navigation aspect. When we look at it, we look at individuals who have served in any capacity, the reserve, the National Guard, active duty, retirement. We look at them as the individual and then begin to apply the state or the federal law for the benefits that they may be wanting to look at. And again, it's when you start seeing other service members beginning to quantify their service. I only served in the National Guard, or I served active duty, but I wasn't deployed. That's when the veterans begin to lessen their own benefits by recognizing what others have done in the service, not taking the moment to step back and go, this is what I did in the service. What now is available to me, and how do I begin to navigate those? And so that's really what our office really is beginning to do, is looking at that holistic approach and trying to change the conversation of any branch, any time period, any service. Let's look at you as the individual and find out what we can apply for.
That is Adam Flood. He's a veteran services officer with La Crosse County. Also on the call with us today, Scott Gomer, a public affairs officer from the Tomah VA. I'm very glad to have our guests here today talking about veteran services available throughout our listening area. In particular, we're talking about the 2021 Veterans Bonanza, which is tomorrow at the La Crosse Center, and we'll have more information about that coming up. Of course, this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a comment or suggestion for a future show, if there's a question that you've always wondered that you'd like us to find an answer to, let us know about it. You can send me an email, newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Program continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern Wisconsin studios. Thank you very much for joining us for a conversation about veteran services. We're talking about the upcoming Veterans Bonanza, and we have guests from the La Crosse County Veterans Services Office. We also have guests from the Tomah VA, and we're talking about how veterans can get in touch with the benefits they deserve and the services they need here on Newsmakers. Jumping into the question of getting signed up, getting in touch with the veterans community as a whole, Scott, there's the official part of it. Do I qualify for this level of insurance or treatment or medical help or whatever? But then there's the communal aspect of veterans being involved with other veterans. Why is that important for that level of connection among people who share in common that aspect of having served in our military?
I think it goes without saying that, groups of people that have common experiences, maybe not exact experiences, but common experiences, and I would say veterans have pretty common experiences, they find that they feel comfortable around one another. Again, as I had mentioned earlier, sometimes when people leave the military and become a veteran, they are on their own in many cases. They may have family and friends, but even for folks in that category that haven't served in the military or been around a military community, it's different. And, veterans can sometimes feel misunderstood or, it can be a challenge. So, again, any type of group that's out there that brings veterans together, there are several, that gives veterans a chance to, tell their war stories, I call it, which is always kind of a lot of fun, sharing stories about what we've all been through. And just, again, it seems to brighten up veterans who may otherwise, be facing challenges. We make ourselves available in many different ways. We do have a La Crosse community-based clinic. It's out at the Valley View Mall Annex off the Highway 16 out there. A little bit difficult to find. It's on kind of the backside of what was the Valley View Mall. But it's a great facility. Level getting in and out, if you've got some challenges with mobility, we make it very easy to do. There's plenty of parking out there, and we've got a great staff that offers more capabilities, more services than what we did when we were in two different locations in La Crosse. So we opened out there last December, and we welcome veterans. Even if you're unsure of anything, you're always welcome to stop by there, ask the staff, they'll be glad to help you out, point you in the right direction, and get you started. Same thing here in Tomah. We are kind of limited in both facilities with drop-ins. We do ask veterans to wear masks. But if you'd prefer to, keep distance, you can give us a call. Our main number is 608-372-3971. And that will connect you to a lot of our different folks. You can even talk to the operator. And, again, for many folks who are not already getting healthcare services, then eligibility would probably be that first stop. But again, just really feel like reaching out to the veteran community is so important. We have so many things, like Adam said, it's difficult for veterans to kind of comprehend how much is available when they're focused on maybe one or two issues at a time. But, we don't mind if you, stop back one, two, 10 times just to find more information. We'll provide pamphlets and handouts and things like that that will help you out. Like I said, our website is a great resource. But again, we just want veterans to know that, they are cared for. They're part of that mission that was set out by Abraham Lincoln so long ago to treat the veteran, his family, his spouse. We want to do all of that sort of thing as much as we can and make ourselves available.
In spite of everybody's best intentions and best efforts, things don't always go the way we want, and that includes the VA along with everywhere else. What improvements have been made? What's the most significant improvement to services that have been made in our area in terms of the VA?
Yeah, I would say some of the things that we're most known for here at TOMA are whole health. So, there's traditional medicine. There are now a lot of studies and research and VA work that's gone into developing this whole health system. Includes things like acupuncture, yoga, mindfulness, a lot of other types of things to help veterans, really kind of ground themselves, get well without necessarily needing medicine or other types of, maybe traditional treatment. So that's a great thing that's available. We have a pretty wide range of medical services available, everything from primary care through audiology and, dental services for some veterans that qualify. So there are a lot of things that we're able to offer. And it's just, it's just a kind of a great thing that we're here. And we want folks to think about us. We would like to be your healthcare provider of choice. Choose VA is one of our, slogans, I guess, if you want to call it that, but it's really a mission for us to seek out and help as many veterans as possible with their healthcare needs.
So what if somebody feels like they might be either things are not being acted on quickly enough, they're not getting the answers they need, they feel as though they might be falling through the cracks. If somebody's already affiliated with VA or is trying to get affiliated with VA, where do they go with those concerns?
We have patient advocates that are here to help people. That's their mission. Folks like Adam help out sometimes, from their level. But, really just to reach out to us, call our number, stop by, things like that. Probably better to call right now because of COVID. But again, it's a governmental, we're part of the government. We want to be as responsive as we can be, and we work hard to do that. So we don't want people to fall through the cracks. We want them to get the care that they need when they need it. So that is our overall mission, and we strive every day to do the best that we can to serve our veterans.
There's another organization that I was excited to learn about this week, the La Crosse Area Veteran Mentor Program. And unfortunately, the representative of that organization who was to have been on our show today has had something come up and is unable to join us. Adam Flood, who's the Veteran Services Officer in La Crosse County and whom we've been talking to, is a former board member, though, of that organization. Adam, I wonder if you could just spend a couple minutes telling us a little bit about what the La Crosse Area Veteran Mentor Program does.
I can certainly do that. So the La Crosse Area Veterans Mentoring Program, or LAVMP, was really set up kind of on a two-tier. It stemmed out of Judge Bierke's vision when veterans were falling into legal troubles. He stood up the La Crosse Area Veterans Court in La Crosse County to just better try and assist veterans who were encountering legal problems that may be stemming from undiagnosed mental health or other issues that had arisen during their time in service, but the individual hadn't sought appropriate ways to handle with it, which led them before the court. And so out of LAVC, or the court, LAVMP stood up as a peer-to-peer mentoring program. And so the original vision was really to have veterans within the community who were grounded or had like similar aspects, but were able to reintegrate into society in a different, healthier manner, be able to partner with these veterans who are going through the court in order to give them someone else, somebody other than a mental health provider, somebody other than a friend or a counselor, someone beyond that, that they could just call at all hours and express, these are my problems, and just have someone to confide in and help potentially guide them from maybe worsening their legal troubles or otherwise. And when LEVMP stood up for the courts, there was success in that peer-to-peer mentoring. And so from that, LEVMP really started to reach out into the community. If we could really engage veterans in a proactive approach before they even started being identified through legal troubles, but maybe starting to struggle in school, that maybe they just needed a peer-to-peer there or at work. What could really the community veterans do for these other veterans to prevent and engage veterans and maybe direct them maybe to other VA resources or other community networks that would be much more healthy and put veterans in a better circumstance than ending up before the court? So that's really what LEVMP's goal is just peer-to-peer mentor support, pairing veterans with other veterans, whether it be from the same time period, same wars, or whatever it might be. But again, when we look at how veterans tend to bond with one another, they do seem to do better with other veterans than potentially some of the other community members. And that's what LEVMP really stands behind, of giving that experience again.
So somebody in the community might be perfectly well-meaning and even in terms of like a mental health professional might have expertise, but it's just helpful to have that that shared experience, sometimes that peer-to-peer aspect. Is that why that's so important?
Absolutely. I mean, you can look at it for other, you know, Alcohol Anonymous, right? They have where they will pair up. They will find others who have sometimes that same struggle, as there's just a different level of connection that sometimes can be made through that relationship. And you don't always want to potentially confide in maybe a spouse, a family member, or a mental health provider. Some of them just don't feel comfortable on what might be some repercussions, but just having somebody else to confide in, be by their side, and knowing that they could be there at any time that they may need that support can be reassuring to a lot of veterans on that aspect.
So I want to ask each of you, as we bring our conversation to a close today, there are a lot of good things going on and a lot of services being offered to our area veterans. What's something that we as a community can do better to serve the veterans of the La Crosse area, of the Toma area, the greater Driftless area? Adam, we'll start with you.
I look at it as education, just as a whole, you know, and it's across any aspect, any industry. The more that we understand from somebody else's perspective, or we understand what kind of resources that are out there, you know, the better ambassador we might be to that individual and getting them to resources or other things that they may need. You know, I always challenge veterans. I challenge family members of veterans or just friends of, you know, what does the veteran know? The veteran may be satisfied in understanding what they currently know, but their life always is changing. So how have they looked into the benefits that are? And part of that challenge then is they themselves may need to step up into a different role and be the individual that needs to know. When we have veterans in nursing homes, we can't access those veterans the same way as they could walk through the office. So how are those individuals really looking at becoming a representative for the veterans, starting to advocate for other things to ensure that that veteran has the quality of life that they were hoping to have, and just being able to continue to engage with that? So I think the community as a whole does well. I mean, when you start looking at some of these vendors who are coming or other vendors or businesses in the community, I think they really do well for identifying veterans. It's just, how do we then turn those individuals or organizations into encouraging the veterans to continue to pursue and understand the benefits that they may not be recognizing?
That's Adam Flood with La Crosse County. Scott Gomer with the Toma VA. What does our community need to do better in terms of the services offered to veterans?
Well, I think, you know, one of the simplest things people can do is just thank a veteran for their service. Many people, you know, depending on when they got out of the military, may or may not ever have gotten that thank you for what they've done to help support and defend the country. So that's an easy thing. We do have a voluntary services part of our organization here at TOMA. They help out with community donations or volunteers for a lot of different programs that help out our veterans. We do also encourage people to get your COVID vaccine. We are administering COVID vaccines at our TOMA facility, at all of our other community clinics, including the one in La Crosse, for all veterans. And that's if you serve today, it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, eligible for normal health care from the VA or anything like that. All veterans, their spouses, and their caregivers are eligible to get the COVID-19 vaccines. And the veterans that are our patients are eligible to get seasonal flu shots right now. You know, so that's also an important thing to protect your health. So I'd like to just encourage everybody to, again, call us on the phone, 608-372-3971. That will kind of get you connected to us, and, you know, we'll be able to determine the best ways that we might be able to help out. And also, I think the community, again, just supporting and encouraging veterans to take part in activities like the Veterans Bonanza down in La Crosse. We're happy to be there. We're going to have folks from our whole health that I mentioned, respiratory therapy, mental health, LGBTQ+, community care, lots of different things. So we're, you know, anxious to meet with people and looking forward to it.
That's Scott Gomer from the TOMA VA, and he was talking, the Veterans Bonanza, by the way, that he was talking about is tomorrow at the La Crosse Center. And what are the hours of that again, Scott?
That's from 10 o'clock in the morning until 4 in the afternoon at the La Crosse Center. Best way to enter is through the south entrance, and we'll be there near that entrance.
All right, Scott Gomer from the VA, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Adam Flood is with La Crosse County. He's the Veterans Services Officer there. Adam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I greatly appreciate your time.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next, a theatrical discussion. We're getting a little bit dramatic as UWL and their students are offering their first in-person theatrical offering since COVID-19 shut everything down in March of 2020. That conversation is next here on Newsmakers. If you'd like to find a previous episode of this program, you can look on our website. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. We'll be back right after this. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios on the campus of the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. And speaking of which, we're talking about a UWL theater production during our segment, and it's really interesting project. It was written locally by students and others, and it's also the first in-person production that the theater department has done recently. So we'll talk about all that. It's a project called Severe Clear, September 11th, From Memory to History. The assistant director and one of the writers of that project is called Emily Rux, and she's with us today. Emily, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you for having me.
And one of the actors in the play is a UWL theater student, musical theater actually, Adam Bloom. Adam, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Emily, you were telling me that this you've actually recently graduated, so you're an alumnus of UWL now, and this project was just so interesting to you that you wanted to stick around to be part of it. Tell me how the idea for Severe Clear came about.
Yeah, so actually in about the fall of 2019, two of our theater faculty, Lori Kinsman and Greg Parmeter, Lori came up to Greg and just had this idea. She was reading a book called The Only Planet in the Sky by Garrett Graff. He is he's a writer, and he has written an article before about 9/11 from the perspective of those who are on Air Force One with the president. And it's just a collection of firsthand accounts from that day. She read that. She was like, this would be really interesting as a theatrical production. Came up to Greg. They had this idea. They read the book and then introduced it to students as a class. They wanted to create it as a class. And so then there was about seven or eight of us. They offered it up. Seven or eight of us took the bait. We signed up for the class. And it was from anywhere from, like, there was a sound designer on the project. There was a lighting designer on the project. There was a couple of writers, a couple of actors. Like, it was people from all sorts of backgrounds in it. We all just wanted to take the class. So they offered it. And from fall of 2020, that was when the class was offered. And so we went up to the rehearsal room every Tuesday and Thursday, and we read The Only Plane in the Sky by Garrett Graff. And it's just, again, just a bunch of firsthand accounts. And so we read it and we picked out which firsthand accounts stood out to us the most. So there's a couple of stories that from that book that made it into the play because those stories stood out to us. But after that, after we collated all of that, we started reading from other sources of the day. And we started gathering stories from there to flesh out the piece. And yeah, basically it started from one article that Lori read. And 2 years later, here we are.
So there are perspectives reflecting, of course, different people from New York City, from Pennsylvania, from D.C., from Air Force One itself, as you mentioned. How many people's stories have contributed to this work when it's all said and done?
That number is, like, really hard to count. Technically, I think there's about 188, like, character stories in this show, but I cannot tell you how many stories have influenced this show in reading the book, in reading other articles, in researching everything that's happened after 9/11, especially in the world since I was maybe 2 years old when the events happened. I don't know if Adam was even born when the events happened. A lot of the people working on this piece were post 9/11 babies. And so even those stories of, like, Greg and Lori, like, where they were at when the events happened, those influenced how we went about writing this piece, because as people who didn't experience the events hands-on, and we've only ever known 9/11 after the fact in an academic sense, we wanted to do these stories justice. There's probably hundreds of stories that influence this piece, but there's about 188 actual, like, voices that are heard in the piece.
So, Adam, you're an actor in the play with so many different characters represented. Do the actors divide all those characters up? Or, I mean, I'm imagining there are not 188 different actors in the play.
Yeah, we do divide it up. There's, like, my title is just Actor 7. We clump together different characters and different, like, stories, as we put it, for certain actors. And it does help out, you know, not 188 different people on stage or large 20-minute chunks where just one person speaking. It's a very interesting way of putting together a show. And from a person walking into it, I actually had the great honor of being one of the early readers for this show in its in one of its first few drafts. So I've seen kind of a little bit of the transition in that sort. It was a very interesting thing to walk into and see that how stories would be portrayed and just the day itself. It was phenomenal.
What's one of the characters that you're involved with or that you know, maybe I don't want to give away, you know, how the whole thing unfolds or how you've put it together entirely. But, like, is there a part of it that's been especially meaningful for you to participate in?
A specific character now, after working through his name's Lieutenant Colonel Ted Anderson. He's one of the workers at the Pentagon. One of the things that made that so meaningful to me is we got the chance to talk to some people who actually were able to go through and witness these events firsthand, people from New York, and one person who was actually working at the Pentagon when, you know, these things transpired. One of the things that he stated is so many, like, either documentaries or stories that are told miss talking about the Pentagon because a plane did hit the Pentagon on that day. And through the stories that Ted Anderson has told that are shown in this play, I feel it's very meaningful to just take a closer look at something that's so forgotten when we look at this day.
Emily, in putting this play together, you mentioned a couple of faculty are part of the writing process and some students as well, and you're all bringing material in, combing through just endless amounts of stories and the way lives have tragically been touched by the events of 9/11. There's a lot that's left on the cutting room floor. How did you decide what gets included?
Yeah. Especially with like 10 people working on this piece, there's going to be stories that hit us differently. Like there's stories that maybe aren't as impactful to me that were impactful to a different student. And so we had so many discussions about, okay, who makes it, who doesn't. There was clear stories of who was going to make it, especially those people that, like, I don't want to say are iconic from the day, but their stories are just so important to the day. Like Janelle Guzman, who was the last survivor pulled from the rubble, we had to include her because her story is so significant. Pasquale Bazzelli, he survived and his story is so famous as being like the surfer who surfed down 22 floors. A lot of first responders, and we needed to make sure that we got the Pentagon voices and of course people from that were impacted by United 93 when it went down in Pennsylvania. There are just so many stories and we needed to make sure that we hit every single big event. So we needed to make sure we had New York voices. We needed to make sure we had Pentagon voices. We needed to make sure we had United 93 voices. And we needed to make sure that like the story of the president was also there because that was a huge part of the day as well. So yeah, there's a lot of discussions, a lot of just like what propelled the story along. So there'd be a lot of stories that are very similar. So like survivors from the South Tower would have very similar stories from each other. So it was whatever told a different story from their perspective. And if it told the same similar story to like one of our main characters, there's characters that are bulky characters that have a lot of their story in this piece. If there is a minor character or a smaller story, I hesitate to use smaller story because all these stories are so important to the day. But one that just didn't have as much like text to it, we would typically cut. There are obviously some like hard cuts that like we fell in love with these people because you're reading their stories and you're reading their words. And these aren't polished stories. These are them speaking. So there's a lot of breaks. There's a lot of awkward sentences. There's a lot of just like humanness in this. So we fell in love with people and we ended up having to cut some people. But I think what we ended up with was a great piece that tells very niche little like pockets of humanness throughout the day that paints the whole picture of 9/11. So yeah, definitely a lot of discussions about who do we keep, who do we not keep. There's a couple characters that I know some of the writers hold very dear to their heart that didn't end up making it in the show. Some moments that we wish could made it, but yeah, one of our guiding questions is like, okay, what's pushing this story along? What's pushing us to the next scene? What's pushing us to the next moment? And if this story isn't helping us with that and it's only holding us back, unfortunately we have to cut it. And we know going into this piece that like this is not an exhaustive experience. So yeah, it was just hitting those big moments and making sure we had voices from every single area.
What's it like? We all could imagine something that is for all of us history that is long in the past, writing about that, writing a play about it, writing a creative work about the revolution or the Civil War or something like that. What's it like, Adam, working on a project like this when you personally don't have any firsthand memory of it, and yet many, 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 many people do, like perhaps most of the adults in your life do. I mean, this was a very seminal moment. I'm not the only one of my friends, certainly, who can remember precisely where I was when these events began to unfold. What's it like telling a historical story that for a lot of your potential audience, it isn't really history yet?
Yeah, that's every time I step on stage, that's actually one of the things that I think. Just people, most of the people that are going to be sitting out there will have experienced this, whether it be firsthand to seeing it on the TV. It's one of those things that you have to be very careful about either how you say something or, you know, portray it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you do have to remember these are people. Like, these are people that are still, well, a lot of them still alive today. You know, you can't, it, like, in a lot of theater, things turn into, you know, oh, let's use stereotypes to help build a character. Let's use this. But we're not building a character. We're portraying somebody. It's very weird to think, you know, I'm portraying an event that, like, I was alive for. I was one, you know, but I this was in, happened in a world that I lived in. It's very difficult to, you know, express, I'd say, the emotion of the day for something that I truly cannot grasp. And that has shaped our world so drastically.
This is, if I'm remembering correctly, this is going to be the first in-person production that the theater department has done since COVID shut everything down in March of 2020. What's the experience going to be like for the audience? Are actors going to be in masks? I'm assuming the audience has to wear masks indoors.
Audience will have to wear masks at all times, but the department has done a very good job of making sure actors are tested and they will be unmasked. So they, but there will be precautions set in place. So audience will always be wearing masks. Actors will not be, and there will be like social distancing to a point. So that way we all know we're safe. But yeah, the department's done a very good job of making sure that the actors are getting tested and knowing their status so that we can all have healthily enjoy in live theater, because we all know we've missed it so much.
Well, and that this is different because, I mean, both of you were UWL students all through last year and all through the second half of the year before that. So what has this been like for each of you? We'll start with Adam and Emily. I want to get your reaction too. What has this process been like, having experienced communal theater type events and then having that taken away from you and now being able to come back to it?
This has been a very, like, a weird sense of deja vu and, like, an odd transition into what we used to know, which we're used to kind of transitioning to, oh, the new, oh, something that we haven't experienced yet. And it's such a weird feeling slowly transitioning into what we used to do, and what we used to do being so, like, oh, that's different. Oh, we're not used to it. Oh, it's like masks off. Whoa, that's weird. It's almost funny to experience that in that kind of a way, but it's also kind of welcoming, and it kind of fills me with a little bit of hope, you know, like we're getting back to what we knew, and people are going to be able to experience again what they used to and what they enjoy. It's and especially with, you know, going through something so, you know, such a different type of production and something that's supposed to, you know, bring such a unique and hopeful message. It's very unique to be experiencing both of these things at the same time. It's, I don't know. It's really cool in my eyes.
Emily?
Yeah, I think I'm really excited to get a live audience back. I know last year they did, they recorded productions. So like the lights were still kind of there. Scenery was still kind of there. Sound was still, like, the whole idea of a tech week and implementing tech was still kind of there. Granted, it was very, like, it was standstill, it was radio plays, it was all that stuff. But I'm really excited to get a live audience back, because being in the audience, being assistant director, I'm not on stage, like, you know, I'm doing stuff. I'm like sitting, watching these guys act so beautifully. It's reminded me why I love theater so much, because it's such a communal activity. Like, you leave everything at the door, and you actually, quite the opposite, you bring everything that you are and who you are, like, and what you do and how you're feeling that day, you bring that into the theater, and that's welcomed. And I'm so excited for that to be back. And it's reminded me, like, it's convicted me. It's like, yes, this is why I do theater. This is why I love theater so much. It's because it's such a human experience. Because humans are acting, humans are finding truth on stage, and humans are watching. Like, it's such a communal, beautiful come together, and I'm so excited for it to be back.
So if someone's interested in seeing the play, it's coming up this weekend. When is it, and how can people score tickets?
It's opening this Friday at the Tolan Theater on the UWL campus. It'll be a 7:30 show. It's also on Saturday as a 7:30. There's a Sunday matinee at 2 p.m. And next week, it's showing at 7:30 on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then on Sunday, there's a 2 p.m. matinee again. You can get your tickets by calling the box office at the on UWL campus, or going in person to the box office, which is right outside the Tolan Theater.
All right. Emily Rux and Adam Bloom are part of the production, A Severe Clear, September 11th, From Memory to History, and it opens this weekend at UWL. Emily, Adam, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to hear part of this conversation again, you can find it, along with all of our other shows, online at WPR.org/newsmakers. There are a couple of opportunities to hear our show each week on the radio. We originate 10 o'clock on Fridays on the Ideas Network 90.3, and then we repeat Friday nights at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And of course, we're always online there at WPR.org/newsmakers. For my producer, Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Thank you very much for joining us. And find us next week on another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.